Welcome to today's Midland Reporter Telegram and Odessa American, read by volunteers at the Recording Library of West Texas. This production is also available at recordinglibrary.org and on the telephone reader by calling 432-617-5555.
Hello, this is Maria reading the Odessa American local and state for Thursday, January 30th, 2020. Report offers a look into moments before shootings by Royal McGregor. Editor's note, this is another in a series of stories detailing the events of Odessa's August 31st mass shooting. The stories are based on police reports that were released Monday following months of records requests to the city of Odessa. Prior to the city of Odessa releasing more than 70 police reports to the Odessa American, it was believed interaction between a Department of Public Safety trooper and a 36-year-old gunman, who killed 7 people and wounded 25 others in Odessa, was a routine traffic stop. Texas Department of Public Safety trooper Chuck Pryor reportedly pulled over Seth Aaron Ader, 36, for failure to signal August 31, 2019, on Interstate 20. However, a police report from the Odessa Police Department officer Taylor Box detailed that a broadcast of reckless driver displaying a long rifle, which turned out to be Ader, and that DPS troopers were given information on Ader, and that they attempted to find him at his home in West Odessa before Pryor was shot. The report does not address if Pryor heard that broadcast before he pulled Ader over. Pryor was wounded during Ader's rampage, but has since returned to work. Calls and emails to DPS spokesperson Sergeant Oscar Villarreal were not immediately returned to address if Pryor heard the broadcast that day before pulling Ader over. Villarreal said via text message he was in a meeting Wednesday afternoon and asked to send him questions by email. FBI Special Agent Christopher Combs said during a press conference on September 2, 2019, that Ader had called the FBI national tip line about 15 minutes before he shot Pryor. Ader also reportedly spoke with Box for an unspecified amount of time on Corporal James Santana's personal cell phone prior to his more than 1 hour shooting spree around Odessa. Shortly after Ader hung up with Box after claiming that his former employers were involved in a conspiracy to murder him and get away with it, dispatch broadcasted over the radio a reckless driver traveling south, the Southwest Loop 338, in a gold-colored Toyota Camry. The police report detailed. The complainant stated a white man was driving erratically and displaying a long rifle. Box checked the registration status, and it was registered to Ader. There were reportedly 2 DPS troopers on scene with Santana and Box, who responded to see if the OPD officers needed assistance. Box stated after hearing the broadcast of the reckless driver that he notified dispatch to have the troopers respond to assist Santana in case Ader was returning to his former employer, Journey Oilfield Services. Santana and Box grabbed their duty-issued patrol rifles and prepared for Ader to arrive, the report detailed. The troopers arrived shortly after, and dispatch said Ader was seen at the intersection of Crane Avenue and Murphy Street. Box told the troopers to gear up. Santana told Angel Madrid, the complainant at Journey Oilfield Services, to stay inside the business after hearing about Ader at Crane Avenue and Murphy Street. Madrid reportedly told officers there was a job site located near that intersection in the 500 block of Murphy Street. Box broadcast over the radio to inform responding officers to locate Ader at the job site. Responding officers weren't able to find Ader. Box, Santana, and the troopers stayed at Journey Oilfield Services for a short period of time in case Ader was still traveling to their location, but they never saw him or his vehicle pass by, the report stated. Box told the troopers all of the information they had collected about Ader, his vehicle description, and a photograph of him from a jail record. The troopers reportedly told Box and Santana they were going to attempt to locate Ader at his registered address from his license plate and left the scene. Santana and Box both left the Journey Oilfield Services. Box started to head back to the police department when he heard dispatch broadcast a transmission that a DPS trooper, later identified as Pryor, had been shot off of Interstate 20, the report detailed. Dispatch stated the suspect's vehicle matched Ader's, and the vehicle was heading west on Interstate 20. Fox reportedly headed to the intersection of South County Road West and Interstate 20 after dispatch was unsure where Pryor was shot. Units were dispatched to the western and eastern side of Odessa off of Interstate 20. When Box arrived at the intersection of Interstate 20 and South County Road West, he saw several troopers on the side of the road. He approached them and began to inform them of the vehicle license plate and Ader. One of the troopers was on the phone and stated Ader's vehicle was last seen headed north on the Southeast Loop 338 from Interstate 20. Dispatch stated there was a gunshot victim in the area of Southeast Loop and Trunk Street, the report detailed. Box traveled north on County Road West to 42nd Street and then traveled east on 42nd Street. As dispatch stated, there were several gunshot victims across the northeastern portion of Odessa. Lacey cites oil business experience. Congressional candidate says industry must be protected in Washington by Bob Campbell. Confronting a crowded Republican congressional primary field and a probable May 26 runoff, former Midland City Councilman J. Ross Lacey is counting on a money-laden campaign chest and his credibility as an oil company president to carry him to victory. Referring to former Air Force fighter pilot August Pfluger II and ex-congressional aide Brandon Batch, who moved home to San Angelo and Midland, respectively, to run, Lacey said, "I didn't just move back to run for Congress. I'm from West Texas, and I understand the oil and gas industry better than any other candidate in this race, which is extremely critical in the Permian Basin. Without oil, we don't have an economy. I will go fight the liberal left and the Green New Deal, who want to shut down fracking and shut this industry down." President and CEO of the Lacey Oil Corporation, Lacey said he expects to spend more than $1 million in the race to succeed the retiring 11th District Congressman, Mike Conaway of Midland. "It's not entirely my own money," he said. Lacey is a fourth-generation oil man whose company was founded by his granddad, James W. Lacey, who got his start in the oil fields of South Texas and Oklahoma. He served 6 years on the Midland City Council from District 4, the western and northwestern sides of town. He has a finance degree from the University of Texas Permian Basin. Asked what the voters are saying, Lacey said that we need a strong fighter in Washington who will stand with President Trump and build a wall at the southern border because we've got crime and drugs flooding into the state of Texas. They want an individual who will be a strong defender of the Second Amendment and have a strong pro-life stance because the right to life is a huge issue at the candidates' forums. We also need to streamline the process for people who want to enter this country legally, because right now the whole process takes 5 to 10 years, while those who enter illegally get free health care and free education on the backs of the American taxpayers. Lacey said marshaling support for the energy business in Washington is important not only to the basin, but also to the nation, because achieving energy independence is integral to national security. "We are the fastest growing area in the country, and we need my expertise in labor and transportation issues," he said. "I don't know who else will be in the runoff. It might be Pfluger. When we go to the runoff, it will be a completely different campaign at that point. We need a man with actual experience to fight for this industry. Shaking hands and getting in front of people is a good portion of it, too. I am West Texas, and I am the right individual to represent this district in the United States Congress." The other Republican candidates are Wesley Verdell of Brady, Robert Tucker of Comanche, Ned Luscombe of Gardendale, Gene Barber of Colorado City, J.D. Faircloth of Midland, and Casey Gray and Jamie Berryhill Jr., both of Odessa. Democrat John Mark Hogg and Libertarian Wacy Alpha Cody, both of San Angelo, are unchallenged in the primary. Monday is the final day to register to vote in the March primaries. Here are other important dates for this year's election. February 18th, early voting begins for the Texas primaries and ends 10 days later. For more information about Ector County voting, visit co.ector.tx.us/PAGE/ector.elections. February 21st, final day to request a ballot to vote by mail in the primaries. February 28th, early voting ends. March 3rd, Election Day. No confirmed coronavirus cases in Texas. Medical Center Health System has received several calls and inquiries about the outbreak of a respiratory illness caused by a novel, new coronavirus called 2019 nCoV that first started this past December in Wuhan, China. As of January 28th, a news release said there have not been any confirmed cases in the state of Texas. In addition, MCHS has not treated any patient with similar symptoms or had to refer any patients for additional testing. The 2019 novel coronavirus, 2019 nCoV, is a new virus that causes respiratory illness in people and can spread from person to person. This virus was first identified during an investigation into an outbreak in Wuhan, China. Patients with 2019 nCoV have reportedly had mild to severe respiratory illness with symptoms of fever, cough, shortness of breath. This virus is not spreading in the United States right now, but the best way to prevent infection is to avoid being exposed to this virus. There are simple, everyday preventative actions to help prevent the spread of respiratory viruses. These include: avoid close contact with people who are sick. Avoid touching your eyes, nose, and mouth with unwashed hands. Wash your hands often with soap and water for at least 20 seconds. If soap and water are not available, use an alcohol-based hand sanitizer. The Centers for Disease Control, along with the Texas Department of State Health Services, is monitoring the developing outbreak in China. The CDC says the immediate risk in the U.S. is low, and there have been only 5 confirmed cases in the U.S. as of January 28th. All 5 cases confirmed were found in people who had traveled from Wuhan. Those 5 are currently in isolation. Local news roundup. Suspect in custody after horse shooting. A man is in custody Wednesday after he reportedly shot his neighbor's horse on January 28th. Ricky Riney, 40, was charged with deadly conduct, discharge of firearm, a third-degree felony, and cruelty to livestock animals, a state jail felony. Ector County Sheriff's deputies were sent to the 6,000 block of North Sparta Avenue in Odessa about an ongoing dispute between Riney and his neighbor Keisha Jarris Dawson, 42. Deputies met with Dawson and saw that part of her horse's left rear hoof had been shot off, the affidavit details. A witness reportedly confirmed that she saw Riney on his property holding a firearm and pointing it in the direction of the victim's residence. She then reportedly saw horses running all over the yard, and Ector County affidavit details. As of Wednesday afternoon, ESCO Sergeant Gary Dusler reported that Riney is not yet fully booked into the jail and that the horse is recovering. Riney has 2 bonds totaling $40,000. 90-year-old killed in collision. A 90-year-old Odessa man was killed in a 2-vehicle collision west of Odessa on Tuesday night. A Texas Department of Public Safety report details that at 8:37 p.m. Tuesday, Velton Harry, 90, was traveling east in the westbound lane of State Highway 302, while Albert Maria, 30, was traveling west. The report details that Harry's Ford Explorer collided with Maria's Chevrolet 2500 pickup. Harry was pronounced dead at the scene by an Ector County medical examiner. It was not indicated if Harry was wearing a seatbelt during the collision, the report details. Maria reportedly had non-incapacitating injuries and was transported to Medical Center Hospital in Odessa. D. Kirk Edwards Performance Center Taking Shape by Ruth Campbell. The state-of-the-art D. Kirk Edwards Family Human Performance Center at the University of Texas Permian Basin continues to take shape, and substantial completion is anticipated for June 22nd. The single-story building will house a biomechanics lab, athletic training education lab, exercise physiology lab, classrooms, team meeting room, lecture hall with 150 seats, faculty and coaches' offices, a men's football locker room with 120 lockers, a women's soccer locker room with 24 lockers, a nearly 9,000-square-foot weight room shared between kinesiology and athletics, and a hydrotherapy pool room and athletic training room. The project architect is Smith Group of Dallas. The construction administrator is Vandergrift Group Architects of Midland, and the construction manager is Lott Brothers of Austin. Total project cost is $37 million. Ken Frazier, Project Manager for Facilities Management at UTPB, and Brian E. Jorgensen, Project Engineer 2 with Lott Brothers Construction Company, conducted the tour. For the biomechanics lab, Fraser said runners can get a head start and come in through a warehouse-like door. There's force plates. The force plates are about 18 inches by 18 inches, and through computers and sensors and all that kind of stuff, it measures the heel-to-toe forces, distance and pressure and all that stuff, and they can look at speeds. They'll have cameras around. Then at the end, we'll have a pad, kind of like what you would see at a gym, a basketball gym, Fraser said. The building also will feature an athlete's lounge with TVs and places to play Xbox, charging stations where they can do assignments and just relax. There will be a wall of fame for students that achieve honors. The football lockers, housed in a football-shaped area, will draw air through the shoes and shoulder pads to help dry them out. Then, of course, they have a locker in here that they can put their wallet and phone and things like that, Fraser said. And there will be an area to hang their uniforms. Fraser said the hydrotherapy pools can be made hot and cold. He said athletes will probably go into the cold pool first to bring down their body temperature and then into the hot pool, similar in temperature to a jacuzzi. There will be a treadmill in the pool where they can walk on the treadmill inside the pool. We will have cameras that they can monitor their progress, the way they step, and look at it from a very medicinal value. I've been told there's nothing like this in all of West Texas, so it's very high tech, Fraser said. The building is going to have electronic card access, which is what Fraser said the university is moving toward. The structure is named for Odessa businessman and friend to UTPB, Kirk Edwards.
Permian High School sets cabaret concert. Permian High School Band will be hosting its 34th annual cabaret concert at 7 p.m. February 25th at the Horseshoe Arena, 2514 Arena Trail in Midland. The concert includes all five Permian High School bands and the three middle schools, Bonham, Nimitz, and William and Young. Tickets go on sale January 31st at 4:30 p.m. Tickets are $10 and $20, and meal tickets are $12. The concert is a fundraiser for the Permian Band, with the Booster Club selling seat and meal tickets and commemorative programs. Along with the entertainment, each school usually has a silent auction or raffle. For more information, go online at permianband.org. This is the medical advice column, To Your Good Health, by Dr. Keith Roach. Dear Dr. Roach, what are the known causes of leukemia? Answer. Leukemia comes from the Greek roots for white blood, because an excess of white blood cells can be seen even without a microscope and a test tube of spun whole blood. White blood cells are the infection and cancer-fighting blood cells. There are two main branches of white blood cells, called granulocytes and lymphocytes. Increasingly, leukemias are subtyped, and treatment is based more on their genetic mutations than by their microscopic appearance. Those mutations in DNA lead a normal white blood cell precursor to become cancerous. What exactly causes those mutations is not known with any precision, but it does appear that it is a single progenitor cell that develops a series of mutations that causes the cell to grow without the normal controls that limit cell division. The initial event might be exposure to a toxic chemical, an excess of radiation, or just bad luck that background radiation we are all exposed to hits exactly the wrong spot, a virus damaging DNA, or something else we don't yet understand. Here are some obituaries and death notices that appeared in the Odessa American on Thursday, January 30th. Ronald Reagan Haynes, age 72, of Odessa, passed away Monday, January 27th, surrounded by his family. He was born June 17, 1947, to Samuel Reagan and wife Dee Loreen in Fort Stockton. He is preceded in death by his parents, Samuel and Dee Loreen, by a sister, Sharon Thornburg, nieces, Jeanette and Donna Haney, son-in-law, Tony Wilson, and great-grandson, Braylon Wilson. Ron is survived by his wife of 53 years, Patty, daughters, Angela, and husband Chris Huffling of Port Neches, Texas, Annette and David Holmesy of Odessa, Cheryl Autry of San Antonio, sister Carolyn and husband Raymond Haney, 7 grandchildren, 12 great-grandchildren, numerous nieces and nephews. Arrangements are entrusted to Acres West Funeral Chapel and Crematory, and condolences may be sent at acreswestfuneral.com. Minnie Rose Jones Garner Rhodes, age 95, of Odessa, passed away on January 26th. Visitation will be 6 p.m. to 8 p.m. Thursday, January 30th, at Sunset Memorial Funeral Home. Graveside services will be held at 4 p.m. Friday, January 31st, at Sunset Memorial Gardens, with Reverend Dr. Jimmy Braswell officiating. Minnie was born in Little River County, Arkansas, to David Andrew and Annie Elizabeth Jones on December 5th, 1924. Minnie is preceded in death by her parents and by her husband Pete, brothers Ernest and Earl, and grandson Jason Garner. Minnie is survived by a son, James Garner, and wife Linda, daughter Janet Davis, son Donald Rhodes and wife Mandy, sister Ursel McLaughlin, and one grandson. Memorials may be given to Concho Health and Rehabilitation in Eden, Texas, or to the Alzheimer's Foundation of America. Arrangements are entrusted to Sunset Memorial Gardens and Funeral Home. To send family condolences, please sign her guestbook at www.sunsetodessa.com. Bertha Christine Maxwell, age 84, of Odessa, died on January 25th. Bertha Christine Luck was born on November 15th, 1935, in Anson, Texas, married Clarence Marvin Maxwell, November 8, 1952, in Gorman, Texas. She is preceded in death by her parents, Oscar and Gladys Luck, her husband, Clarence Calvin Maxwell, 2 sisters, Marie Cooper and Betty Sue Luck, 1 brother, Oscar Henry Luck, and 1 great-grandson. Bertha is survived by 4 daughters, Janet Perry of Point, Texas, Regina Tucker and husband Glenn of Odessa, Sharon Hooker and husband Marcos of San Angelo, Texas, and Joanna Hadley of Odessa, along with 11 grandchildren and 20 great-grandchildren. A visitation will be held on Thursday, January 30th, from 5 to 9 p.m., and Friday, January 31st, from 9 a.m. to 9 p.m. at Hubbard Kelly Funeral Home of Odessa. A graveside service will be held on Saturday, February 1st, at 2 p.m. at Eastland Cemetery in Eastland, Texas. Danny Okola Cooper, age 67, of Odessa, died Monday, January 27th, in Odessa. Celebration of life is scheduled for 4 p.m. to 6 p.m. Saturday, February 1st, at Acres West Funeral Chapel. Jackie Renaya Duralia, age 46, of Odessa, died Tuesday, January 28th, in Odessa. Services will be scheduled at a later date. Arrangements are by Acres West Funeral Chapel of Odessa. Felton Ray V.R. Harry, age 90, died Tuesday, January 28th, in Odessa. Services are pending with Sunset Memorial Gardens and Funeral Home of Odessa. Elfida Garcia Leyva, age 71, died Tuesday, January 28th, in Odessa. Services are pending with Martinez Funeral Home and Crematory of Odessa. Thomas Brandon Ortega, age 41, of Odessa, died Saturday, January 25th, in Odessa. Funeral service is scheduled for 1 p.m. February 2nd at Sunset Memorial Funeral Home Chapel. Burial will follow at Sunset Memorial Gardens. Pastor Pedro Pando is officiating. Catherine Lynn Ortega, age 42, of Odessa, died Saturday, January 25th, in Odessa. Celebration of life is scheduled for 1 p.m. February 1st at Sunset Memorial Funeral Home. Burial will follow. Pastor Pedro Pando is officiating. Sue C. White, age 81, of Odessa, died Wednesday, January 29th, in Odessa. Services will be scheduled at a later date. Arrangements are by Hubbard Kelly Funeral Home of Odessa. Council approves art ordinance. The story was written by Michael Merlo. During Tuesday's Odessa City Council meeting, the council approved multiple items, including an ordinance requiring 1% of any public project for a public art program in under half hour before adjourning. The City Council unanimously approved the 1% for art program, which uses 1% of any public project that costs $250,000 or more for public art. All council members were in attendance, except for District 4 member Tom Sprawls. Randy Hamm, the executive director of the Odessa Council for the Arts and Humanities, stood in front of the City Council and said, quote, "One of the most visible signs of the city's commitment to quality of life is a percent for art program," end quote. Quote, "It is something that our neighbors in Lubbock at Texas Tech University have been doing since the 1980s, and it is now one of the top 10 public art programs in the United States," end quote. Hamm spoke of the multiple art projects that have been successful in Odessa, including the Odessa Spire. Quote, "We are starting to see private investment in art, and I think that's one of the great byproducts of our art program," end quote. He spoke about the increasing of businesses coming to the Arts Council, like the Odessa Marriott and the First Basin Credit Union. Quote, "We are setting a good example for businesses that want to come here and operate and employ people," end quote. At-large council member Peggy Dean thanked Hamm. Quote, "We are all truly inspired by the things you are doing for art in Odessa. It really is making a difference, and people are noticing, and you're setting a great example," end quote. The City Council also tabled an item for Randy Spencer's Randy's Cocoa for Cops donation until the next agenda. The donation would be $10,000 for the Odessa Police Department's K-9 and drone unit. The council also approved the asbestos abatement and demolition of the old Odessa American Building and tire warehouse on East 4th Street, as well as the professional service agreement with JSA Architects to provide design services for the rehabilitation of 307 North Lee to add more office space for $159,000. McLing Mims assaults female with bat. The story was written by Christy Sullivan. Jala Damico McLing Mims, age 27, of 807 North Alice, was arrested and booked into the Ward County Jail on December 29th on a charge of aggravated assault of a date, family, house member with a deadly weapon, a first-degree felony. According to Monahans Police Department Captain Christopher Quintana, quote, Sergeant Xavier Ramon and Officer Beatrice Diaz responded to a welfare check in the 700 block of North Alice Street on Sunday, December 29th. The officer spoke to the victim, who was identified as Lily Davis. Davis told officers her boyfriend, McLing Mims, assaulted her with a bat, Quintana said. McLing Mims was there at the residence and was subsequently arrested and charged with aggravated assault with a deadly weapon, and his previous bond was revoked. Bond was set at $10,000 for aggravated assault deadly weapon, and bond was denied for the revocation. McLing Mims remains in custody at the Ward County Jail. If convicted, McLing Mims could face 2 to 20 years in prison and or a fine of up to $10,000. The case is still under investigation, and it's not clear if McLing Mims will face additional charges. Community embraces new county extension agent. The story was written by Paul Cyphers. The Ward County community has warmly embraced the county's newest extension agent, Haley Lacaz. She joined the staff at the Ward County Extension Office in February as an assistant to Abigail Pritchard as part of the Family and Community Health Services. She became the leader of that post when Pritchard accepted an AgriLife position in Midland over the summer. Quote, The 4-H family and the entire community have welcomed me with open arms. This is a great community, she said. Haley grew up in Natchitoches, Louisiana, and is a self-proclaimed country girl. She grew up raising and selling livestock with her family, especially Brangus cattle, and more recently several varieties of goats, including pygmy goats. She graduated from Northwestern State University of Natchitoches in 2018 with a Bachelor of Science degree, majoring in general studies and a minor in social science. When she was offered the position in Monahans, her boss told her, quote, You should make a trip to Monahans before you give me your final answer, end quote. Quote, I was working at Bell's at the time, and I didn't understand why at first, but I told my mom, we're going to Monahans for a trip, Haley said. I came out during the stock show last January. It was just like home, just different scenery, end quote. Haley has been involved in 4-H her entire life. In high school, she was a junior leader for camps and helping with other parishes. In college, she was an adult volunteer and worked at camps across the state. Her role as a family and community health agent covers a large segment of community needs. It is a role that helps residents better their lives through science-based educational programs designed to improve the overall health and wellness of not only individuals, but families and communities as well. Nutrition and consumer education are also important aspects of her job. She has already conducted workshops dealing with child development and even ATV safety. Perhaps one of the more interesting experiences so far was a Stitch in Time workshop. Quote, I couldn't even sew a button, she said with a laugh. I told the kids we would learn together. It was a fun experience, end quote. One of the most successful programs to date was the Beautiful Workshop. A total of 42 preteen girls attended the day-long event with several local and area experts talking to the girls on topics such as beauty, preteen health, nutrition, finances, and more. Another important program, especially when people tend to overindulge with eating over the holidays, is a Maintain the No Gain program. Haley also has plans to bring back the Texas Extension Association, which would target topics for the entire community, such as food preparation and food safety, home safety, and winter gardening. Quote, "Lots of crafts and helping home educators are also things I want to do," she said. Asked what the most difficult part of her job was, she struggled trying to come up with an answer. Quote, "There is really nothing," she said pensively. On the other hand, asking her the favorite part of her job, she said without any hesitation, "The kids." Quote, "I do get a little homesick at times, but things are so busy, I don't have a lot of time to think about. But I do try to get home once in a while," Haley said. Haley's dad is a mechanic and specializes in logging equipment for the forestry industry. Her mother is a retired teacher, and one younger brother rounds out her Louisiana family. This is the medical advice column, To Your Good Health, by Dr. Keith Roach. Dear Dr. Roach, I have heard that fish oil can clog the arteries and cause problems, but I've also heard it's good to take. I don't know if it is good or bad. Can you help me out with this? Answer. There remains controversy about fish oil, but recent studies prompted the U.S. Food and Drug Administration Advisory Committee to recommend wider use of a prescription fish oil. These new studies show that icosapent ethyl, VASEPA, a highly purified fish oil ester, reduced the risk of cardiovascular events by 5% and lowered the risk of cardiovascular death by 0.9% in people with high triglycerides, known coronary artery disease, diabetes, and at least one other risk factor, despite the use of statin drugs. For people with higher than average risk of heart disease and high triglycerides despite statin therapy, I believe fish oil or fish oil-based pharmaceuticals has a role to play in reducing the risk of heart attack, stroke, and death that will be further revealed in the next few years. COPD encompasses variety of ailments. The story was written by Ruth Campbell. Chronic obstructive pulmonary disease is an umbrella of respiratory ailments from emphysema to chronic asthma and bronchitis. Quote, "When you have continuing infections like that, it causes damage to the lungs, so it kind of gets umbrellaed under the COPD," cardiopulmonary patient educator Sandra Reyes said. Quote, "The number one cause of COPD is smoking. It's pollutants in the air. You can get those from work. There is one genetic piece of COPD," Reyes said. Among the symptoms of COPD are coughing with or without phlegm, wheezing, and shortness of breath. Quote, "There is no cure for it, but it is treatable and preventable," Reyes said. By preventable, Reyes means not smoking, wearing a mask, or having well-ventilated workspaces if you work with pollutants like sawdust. Quote, "A lot of it, too, is respiratory infections. You don't want to get sick all the time, so you need to make sure to get your flu shot and pneumonia vaccine," she said. Reyes says regions of the state are just now starting to keep track of COPD, so there isn't an accurate number of the prevalence statewide. But about 5.4 to 5.5% of the state's population has COPD. Hand hygiene also is important. A pulmonary function test can be conducted to determine what disease under COPD they have and how severe it is. Quote, "That's probably the most important, is getting in and getting that test done, because it will help, too, with the medications. So once you get tested, you get confirmed that you're diagnosed, We can go at that point and prescribe the correct medication that you need. The bad thing about COPD is because of the symptoms, shortness of breath, coughing, a lot of people think it's just aging, Reyes said. Quote, once you get diagnosed and we put you on the right medication, then we really encourage our patients to do pulmonary rehab. We have that at medical center, she added. There is no cure for COPD, she said. It's a progressive disease. Quote, the more that you take care of yourself, it will progress slowly, Reyes said. If you continue to smoke or keep getting infections or pneumonia, your lungs are going to progressively get worse. Quote, what we try to do with our patients is help them avoid any triggers that will cause them to have an exacerbation. We'll get them on the medications that they need, she said. Screening questions are given to patients to help determine how far the disease has progressed. Quote, they're simple questions like, do you have a cough? Have you felt short of breath? Have you smoked 100 cigarettes in your entire life? If the number's pretty low on the screener, if you're 0 to 4, you're at low risk, and 5 to 10, you're at high risk. We just encourage patients to take the screener to the doctor and say, I need to get tested because I think most of the time the doctors are going to think you might have GERD. That's why you keep coughing, or you might have a touch of asthma or something. They really need to go in and get that test done, Reyes said. GERD stands for gastroesophageal reflux disease, WebMD.com said. You can get COPD from secondhand smoke. Quote, it used to be a man's disease, but now it's a woman's disease. It goes back to cigarette advertising, which was aimed at men in the 40s and 50s, Reyes said. The advertising changed after more women entered the workforce, and now they have COPD. Quote, a lot of them, if they didn't smoke, they were getting it from their husband's secondhand smoke, Reyes said. Flu, colds, and sinus infections can exacerbate COPD, so people with COPD should avoid people with the flu, wash their hands, or use hand sanitizer. Quote, stay away from people that are sick. It's the best thing to do. That's kind of really hard with COPD patients because they're in an older stage of life. At that point in life, they have grandkids. Everybody wants to see the grandkids. If they're sick, I have to tell my patients, you need to stay away from them, Reyes said. Make music in your heart. This was written by the Reverend Dr. Don Weeks, pastor, Connection Christian Church. Howard Thurman, author of Jesus and the Disinherited, wrote a poem I always think of this time of year. It keeps me company as I put away the Christmas decorations and look toward the year ahead. The poem reads in part, when the song of the angels is stilled, when the shepherds are back with their flocks, the work of Christmas begins, to find the lost, to heal the broken, to feed the hungry, to release the prisoner, to bring peace among the people, to make music in the heart. If you're a Bible student, then you recognize most of the poem's words from Jesus' first sermon in Luke chapter 4. Jesus quotes from the 61st chapter of Isaiah as he prepares the congregation for his ministry, which will be about proclaiming good news to the poor and setting the oppressed at liberty. What is amazing about God coming to be present with us in Jesus Christ is not just that God came, but that God came by becoming poor. Did you know that in Texas, One out of every seven households struggles to have enough food to eat. 22% of children in Texas are not regularly getting enough to eat. For Christians, caring for the poor is how we honor and love our Jesus, who came to us as a poor child. Whether it's bringing Meals on Wheels, volunteering at a homeless shelter, or supporting our food bank, we are serving the Christ child who came to offer salvation to all. Chris Stanley gets this. He's a UTPB art professor, but it seems his real job in this community is to make sure we are being attentive to our neighbors in need. 20 years ago, he started a very important tradition in our community that allows us to be about the work of Christmas all year long. Empty Bowls connects artists with Feeding the Hungry. Our food bank has scheduled its 20th annual Empty Bowls fundraiser from 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. January 26 at the Odessa Marriott. Handmade pottery bowls will be $15 each, filled with all-you-can-eat soup. Come fill a bowl and feed someone in need. It's one more step toward being about what Jesus came for, to find the lost, to heal the broken, to feed the hungry, to release the prisoner, to bring peace among the people. Surely, when we do that, we will also make music in our hearts. This article is from the religion section of the Odessa American. Jesus's mystery years considered. Ministers believe he lived a quiet life in the Nazareth area. The story was written by Bob Campbell. The Bible is mostly silent on what Jesus Christ was doing between the ages of 12 and 30, but how he filled those years may be surmised with a fair degree of accuracy, ministers say. Discounting unsubstantiated stories that Jesus traveled to India and Great Britain as a young man, the clergymen believed he stayed in Nazareth in northern Israel and kept working there as a carpenter after his father Joseph died. Quote, "The Gospels talk about either the carpenter or the carpenter's son," said the Reverend Steve Brooks, pastor of the First United Methodist Church of Midland. Quote, "It seems clear that he was born in Bethlehem and was there until Herod tried to kill him when he was two. The family stayed in Egypt, probably northern Egypt, for 2 to 5 years, and moved to Nazareth," end quote. Brooks said Jesus lived in Nazareth, then a village of about 400 people, with his mother Mary, four brothers, and at least two sisters, till walking 20 miles northeast to Capernaum, on the north shore of the Sea of Galilee, to start his ministry. Quote, "The blanks are not filled in for us, but I don't think the gospel writers thought it was pertinent," he said. "If we just work with what's there, that's what changes our lives," end quote. Crescent Park Baptist Church pastor John Copeland thinks Jesus and Joseph made farm implements. Quote, "One story behind all this is that one day in the shop, Joseph cut the brace for a plow too short, and Jesus reached over and touched it and lengthened it for him," said the Reverend Copeland, who is moving to Tavares, Florida this month to train as a hospice chaplain. Quote, "They went around the Sea of Galilee working and were known in that area," end quote. Copeland said they likely worked on the Mammoth Roman Theater at Sepphoris, 4 miles north-northwest of Nazareth, and for area farmers in the fertile growing region. Quote, "The Valley of Armageddon is on the other side of the hill from Nazareth," he said. "That's where the final conflict on this earth will be as the King of Kings and Lord of Lords conquers the enemies of Israel," end quote. Asked his view of the Shroud of Turin, which some Christians consider Jesus' burial shroud, Copeland said he thinks it is legitimate because the image of Jesus' face and body was supernaturally imposed on the linen, not painted or stained, at the moment of his resurrection. The Reverend Michael Siss, Bishop of the Catholic Diocese of San Angelo, said Jesus, quote, worshipped in the synagogue in Nazareth that is still in existence today. He was living as a young man, a good, practicing Jew, and working with his father, Bishop Siss said. Continuing the quote, we assume that Joseph passed away before Jesus started his public ministry. Mary and Jesus would have been living in the same home, and he would have worked nearby. I don't know how far he ventured away from Nazareth, but he would have probably been working around the Sea of Galilee and would have periodically gone 65 miles south to the temple in Jerusalem for high holy days. An important trade route between Egypt and Syria passed through that area, and Jesus would have had interactions with people from many different cultures and nations. It may be that the Bible doesn't say much because he was just living a normal life. End quote. Redeemer Lutheran Church pastor Eric Stadler said Jesus, quote, worked and served his family and was a good son until he started his public ministry. Some non-biblical sources have tried to expand on that period, but have not been found credible by Christian theologians, the Reverend Stadler said. Continuing the quote, we know they were a poor family because Joseph and Mary had to make the simplest sacrifice when they dedicated Jesus in the temple. Most people think of carpentry as a nice trade, but he was probably more of a day laborer who did simple contract work. I think he followed his father around from job to job. Quote, we know he had brothers and sisters, but we don't know how well they got along, he said. He wasn't well received by them when he began his ministry. I personally wonder what it would have been like to have a brother like Jesus. Maybe they said, you never get in trouble, Jesus. He lived a simple, basic life. It's not mentioned for the most part because it is not pertinent to his teachings or ministry. What is told in the scriptures is what we need to know. End quote. Supervisor makes imaging her life's work. The story was written by Ruth Campbell. Armed with an interest in mammography, Becky Wiscombe has risen to supervisor of the Center for Women's Imaging at Medical Center Hospital, and she said she feels like she is making a difference in women's lives. In her 23rd year in women's imaging, Wiscombe has been a mammography technologist for 22 years and an X-ray technologist for 23. The hospital offers bone density testing, mammography, and breast biopsies. Wiscombe says she has three technologists at the main campus and two at the Center for Health and Wellness. One of the techs at Health and Wellness also does computed tomography, or CTs. Their schedule generally has between 40 and 50 exams. Quote, finding a breast cancer early can make a huge difference in a woman's prognosis and diagnosis of her disease and treatment, Wiscombe said. Knowing that you make a difference, that's the biggest part of it. End of quote. Quote, when we do find something early, that's a great feeling. Plus, the girls I work with are awesome. We've had some come and go, but we have a great, great family here. We're all really, really close, and it's just a family department, really. And it's all women, which makes it really nice. We get along really well here, she added. When she first started, she thought everybody was the same, but everyone is different. Quote, we use different paddles on different sizes or different areas of the breast. We can use different techniques of positioning, Wiscombe said. Quote, "Of course the machine moves in every direction, so that makes it a lot easier. Dr. Mason Hicks is our radiologist. He is wonderful at helping us to figure out exactly how we need to take care of that patient and what he needs to make a good diagnosis for that patient." End quote. The paddles WISCOM is referring to are the compression paddles that come down on the breast that are hooked to the machine. Quote, "We have all different sizes and shapes of those that do different things, from just regular mammography to magnification views, so we can look at something and make it look bigger than it actually is, or spot compression views where we can push the tissue out of the way so we can see something more clearly," WISCOM said. Quote, "We have a large paddle for the larger-breasted women. We have a smaller paddle for the smaller breast," she added. Mammograms are also conducted for men. Quote, "Usually there's 3 or 4 men every month that come in with a lump in the breast. People don't know that men can actually get breast cancer, and we've had a couple that have been diagnosed here at Medical Center that have had breast cancer. We've even had some ladies who will tell us of their family history that their father or their brother had breast cancer. It's not as common, of course, as it is in women, but it does occur. We have different sized paddles for men as well. The men have more muscle in the breast. Women have more fatty tissue, but we can still get great pictures on men with the paddles that we have," she said. More people are requesting 3D mammograms. Quote, 3D has made a huge impact in mammography. Most ladies want the 3D in the state of Texas. It's now law that the insurance companies have to cover 3D, so that's made a big impact on healthcare for women, because before, some insurance companies weren't covering it, WISCOM said. The old way of conducting mammographs was on film. Then it moved to digital, and they were able to see through the breast a bit better, WISCOM said. Quote, "But with 3D, it's compared to CT, but it's not a CT because it takes slices of pictures through the breast," she said. "It's still an extremely low-dose X-ray, but it takes tiny little slices through the breast so that you can see from this slice to that slice where something could be located. A lot of times we see things when we press the breast from top to bottom or side to side. Things get overlapping. Then when you do the CT part or the 3D part, tomosynthesis, it separates all of that," end quote. She noted that 3D mammograms have helped a lot to be able to see through a breast more clearly. Digital also has made the process faster. Quote, "We can see through the breast in tiny increments. It's improved so much in just 20 years, WISCOM said. Using digital means less exposure for the patient because you don't have to repeat the images. It's easier on the technologist because they're not carrying cassettes back and forth, and with tomosynthesis, it's come even further. WISCOM says a mammogram should not cause a lot of excessive pain. Quote, "There are women who do have more pain issues than others, more sensitivity to compression. But we really try to work really hard not to compress someone to the point of pain," WISCOM said. "The more compression you get, the better the image, and the brief discomfort can save your life," she said. Quote, "But we don't want to cause too much discomfort for the patient and mammography. I mean, really, you think a mammogram hurts more than having breast cancer and breast surgery and all of that? It's only a few seconds of just a little bit of discomfort, and most of us can get through that pretty easily," WISCOM said. There are a lot of financial programs to help pay for mammograms, and Pank the Basin is one of the best in the country, she said. Quote, I couldn't say enough about them. They made a huge difference for the ladies of this area and the Permian Basin. Pank the Basin is amazing, Wiscombe said. She noted that 1 in 8 women get breast cancer. Quote, it's so important to get them mammograms done every year, Wiscombe said. Some women who are 75 or 80 ask if they can stop getting mammograms, but Wiscombe noted that doctors say most cancers are found in women over the age of 65. For a screening mammogram, Wiscombe said Dr. Hicks likes to read them within a week, but it's usually 3 to 5 days, so patients should get a letter within a week to 10 days. With a diagnostic mammogram, results are given the same day. Quote, they have to be read within 30 days, but we're way quicker than that, Wiscombe said. That's way too long to have to wait, end quote. Wiscombe added that there is always something new to learn in mammography. Quote, we did needle localization in patients where we place a wire in the breast through a needle through mammography placement or with ultrasound placement to find an area that we've already diagnosed as breast cancer so that the patient can go to surgery and the doctor can go strictly to that little area and take that area out, she said. Quote, they have an item called a Savvy Scout needle, and it has a little reflector on the end of it, and when we place that needle in and put the reflector in the breast, the surgeon uses a reflector paddle that finds it, and he can go right in and take that reflector out. It's much easier on the patient. They don't have a wire in their breast. They don't have to come across from the hospital to have it done. They can have it done 2 or 3 days prior to surgery, even a month prior to surgery, so it makes it much easier. There's always some new technology coming out that's better for women's health and mammography in general, Wiscombe said. Carol Evans, MCH Director of Radiology, said you can rest assured that the mammography technologists at MCH Center for Women's Imaging are highly qualified to do their jobs. Quote, in addition to excellent skills, they are passionate about identifying breast cancer in its earliest stages and work diligently to provide high-quality imaging to the radiologist for interpretation. Add to that their compassion for their patients, their drive to make the procedure as pleasant as possible, and it is evident that we have an excellent team of mammographers working to meet your personal needs, Evans said in an email.
That's all for today's Midland Reporter Telegram and Odessa American, a production of the Recording Library of West Texas. You can also hear this program anytime online at recordinglibrary.org or by calling the telephone reader at 432-617-5555.